honorable members, our support staff, platform. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the Department of Cooperative Governance and SALGA, who are going to be making presentations on the Division of Revenue Bill. If I'm correct, I'm not sure whether COC has been led by the brand new minister, Comrade Kadiman, and the whole team. Introduced the team if you're around, and then also SALGA. Comrades will then introduce the team and just get to know who's leading SALGA today on the Division of Revenue. Thank you very much for being flexible and accommodating us to start at 10 rather than the initial time that was communicated, which was 9 o'clock. We'll start with a SALGA, and after that, let me just check. Is the department available now? Because just looking at it, I thought perhaps let's start with the presentation of COCTA, and then allow SALGA after that. But it doesn't matter because we'll only discuss after both presentations. But you are very much welcome. As you would know, that the Minister of Finance, amongst the bills that he presented during his budget speech, was the Division of Revenue Bill, which is the bill that we are dealing with. Division of Revenue Bill is the bill that allocates the national race funds amongst the three spheres of government: national, provincial, and local government. So that's what we are considering today. We are very, very much welcome, SALGA and the Department of Cooperative Governance. Having said that, let me allow the Department of Cooperative Governance to start with the presentation. We'll see who's let me just so that let's allow the department to start, and then after that we'll allow SALGA to make a presentation. But before we do that, do I have any apologies, Darren?
Yes, Chairperson, we received apologies from Mr. Oscar Matafa and from Mr. Zola Mnanzana. Thank you.
Okay,
Chairperson.
Yes,
morning, Chairperson Shekima. Chair, yes, I'm catching flight at 11:25, but I will be on till about 11:10 till I board.
Okay, thank you. Fine. I think Honorable Mlenzan and Matafa will also try to join. Yes. COCTA, please come in. The presentation.
Honorable Chair, good morning.
Good morning, good morning, Minister. Let me just congratulate you before we even start. Thank you very much, and we're looking forward to continue engaging with your good self and your department. All of the best.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for the messages of support and appreciation. We have accepted the daunting task. We hope we will be able to make a change to the lives of our people. Honorable Chair, I am joined by both the new deputy ministers. Honorable Tau is still struggling to join in, but we are communicating on the side, and he will quickly be joining in. And DM Zolile Benz Ngamashe, the same. And I also will, with your permission also, welcome them to the sphere, DM Tau, again to local government. He has welcomed actually many of us into the sphere. It will rather be the other way around, but also DM Benz Namashe from Traditional Affairs has been in the house and subsequently is also joining us in the department to lead us in Traditional Affairs. We also are accompanied, Honorable Chair, by our DG, Avril Williamson. We also have our DG from Traditional Affairs, Mashwahle Dipofa. We also have our CEO from MISA, Mr. Ntandazo Vimba, our DDGs as well, and the ministries of COCTA and officials. With that being said, Chair, may I officially say good morning to all in attendance and honorable members. And firstly, thank you for affording us an opportunity to come and brief the committee and comment on the 2023 division of revenue, particularly as it relates to its ability to adequately fund municipalities that are in financial distress. Over the 2023 MTF period, about 521 billion will be transferred directly to local government, and a further 26.6 billion has been allocated for indirect grants. So the aggregation of this direct and indirect allocations will be outlined in detail in the main presentation. And worth noting, Chair, is the fact that poor and largely rural municipalities receive the bulk of their revenue from transfers, while urban can raise the majority also of the remainder of their budgets from their own revenues. So Chair and members, of critical importance for us to also note equally is that the division of the Revenue Bill Act in its current form does not provide special grant funding for municipalities that are in financial distress. The bill rather provides a broader framework through which nationally raised the revenue is divided between the three spheres of government. This was also raised and confirmed by our municipalities in 2022 during our local government summit. And we think discussions that are underway needs to ensure that they enhance and change the status quo, particularly for the rural and small municipalities, so that they can be able to develop appropriate funding mechanisms for themselves, and where they are it's difficult and unable to do so, national and provincial government need to be able to assist by developing a comprehensive way on how they could also be supported, because not doing that translate directly to not funding the poor and not improving the lives of those who are staying in small and rural municipalities. Our presentation, Honorable Chair, will also cover through MISA how we collaborate with our municipalities and other sector departments to assist municipalities, which are mainly in financial distress, with infrastructure development. Again, with regards to municipal system improvement grants, the department has determined and outlined key areas which it will assist municipalities to address issues resulting in adverse audit outcomes for municipalities, especially through technical assistance on both improvement of data and records management. One, as you may know, records management has been highlighted by the AG repeatedly in municipalities. So the department is assessing the state of records and its management in each of these municipalities so that we could develop implementation plan and assist municipalities to ensure that at any given time, whether parliament or any other stakeholder, even community members are requesting for information and records, they are available easily, and that will become a key pillar of ensuring that the national and provincial record management system is put up in place. Chair, I will not go into all the key issues that will be touched in the presentation, but I also thought it is important that I touched on the local government equitable share, which we understand is offsetting occurs in municipalities and are not able to unspend. A conditional grants because the funds are redirected or used to other purposes other than what they are meant for. And this the AG has reported mainly, particularly payment of salaries and running of many of the operations of municipalities. But we look that this is an unintended purpose and rather we need to offset and ensure that the equitable share is used for what it is meant to do, but also to ensure that we clearly outline the repairs, maintenance of infrastructure in municipalities. Honorable Chair, finally, I will touch briefly on disaster. We will show that there are unallocated allocations in the division of revenue and will only be able to be released only up on the classified disaster as a top-up fund when organs are unable to deal with the effects of the disaster and grant conditions have been met. You will know, Chair, that we are, because of climate changes and constant climate conditions that are no longer favorable to our people, particularly in rural and in muddy areas, we always face challenges. Currently, there are two state of disasters, one on energy, and one on the floods that occurred in about six provinces. And DECOG, through our NDMC center, is assisting provinces and municipalities to ensure that we align their programs of flood support to bring back the life of the communities to what it originally was. So to this end, municipalities have put up measures to address some of the challenges and progress will be monitored through their monthly reports and quarter reports to ensure that we fast track when they are disaster areas. Chair and members, thank you very much for allowing me to echo these opening remarks. And I will wish to invite DECOG through our Director General to present our report. And at the end of each, we'll collectively provide responses to questions which may arise. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. With your permission, may I switch off my video?
Please proceed with your team, Honorable Minister.
Yes. Good morning to the Honorable Chairperson. I also want to greet our Honorable Minister and our Honorable Deputy Ministers. And I also greet all the members of the Standing Committee. With your permission, Chairperson, for bandwidth purposes, I want to request that I turn the video off.
Perfect.
Thank you, and then proceed with the presentation. So, Chair, we are actually here to present to the Standing Committee on Appropriations, the Division of Revenue Bill. And it's really for us then to provide an overview of the bill and its ability to adequately fund the municipalities, especially those in financial distress. We were also requested to provide a detailed report on some of the actions that the department has undertaken to assist municipalities that are in financial distress, to also look at a detailed overview of requirements for reconstruction and per province, and then also just a detailed report on the progress by the department in response to the floods, especially in KZN. And then also a detailed report on the financial performance of the municipal infrastructure grant, the disaster response grant, the municipal disaster recovery grant, and the integrated urban development grant as at the end of the third quarter. and also just a summary of the financial and non-financial performance as at the end of the third quarter, and then also just any other matters that the committee actually requested us to look at. So if you go to the next slide, we have provided the overview of the DORA bill, specifically on transfers to local government. Our minister touched on the fact that we will be, for this MTIF period, transferring the 521.7 billion. And in direct transfers to local government over the medium term, this actually accounts for 10% of the national government's non-interest expenditure. And when you also look at the indirect transfers, if these are added, the total spending on local government increases to 10.6% of the national non-interest expenditure. So the local government fiscal framework then responds to the constitutional assignment of powers and functions to the sphere of government. We also know that the national transfers account for a relatively small proportion of the local government fiscal framework, with the majority of the local government revenues being raised by municipalities themselves through their substantial revenue raising powers. However, we also know that each municipality varies dramatically, with the poor rural municipalities actually receiving most of their revenue from transfers, while the urban municipalities raise the majority of their own revenues. So this differentiation in the way municipalities are funded will continue in the period ahead. And as a result, transfers per household to most rural municipalities are more than twice as large as those of the metropolitan municipalities. So the overview itself on the direct transfers, this gives us a view of all grants that are direct, starting firstly with the equitable share. We know that the if you look at it across the MTF, I won't go through every single year, but starting with this year, 2022-23, we see that this is actually the biggest grant. It's just over 87 billion. The next grant that is actually also quite big is the direct conditional grants, which are then also tabled throughout this column. And these actually then amount to 154 billion. And of course, if you can take it year on year, it then grows to 163 billion, and then just to 174 billion, and then just to over 183 billion. And therefore, the 521.6 billion over the period. It's important to note that the equitable share is the biggest portion, which makes up just on 60% or just under. And then all the other direct conditional grants make up between 14%, and then the general fuel levy that is shared then between the metros makes up a small portion of that. If we can then move to the next slide, just on the indirect transfers to the local government itself, we can see that this amounts to, in this period, 8.1 billion, and over the MTF, a total of 26.6 billion. And of course, you can see which ones are these grants and what are the amounts that have actually then been allocated year on year. If you could move to the next slide. So with regards to the per household allocation to municipalities, what this slide actually indicates to us is that the average equitable share per household in the metro is then less than what you would find in a rural municipality.
Recording stopped.
And if you look at it, you can see that
recording in progress. In
rural municipalities, it is an average of 8,500 rand, whilst in the metros, it's 3,200 rand. So This is as a result of municipalities not being able to raise adequate revenue, and as such are then subsidized through the equitable share. If we can then go to the next slide. So there are some changes that have also occurred on the local government allocations. So the additions to the local government equitable share is an 8.3 billion, which was added to increase coverage on the provision of three basic services. And then if you look at that 8.3 billion, it's then spread across the 3 years to fully fund the provision. Through the formula to ensure fairness across all the 257 municipalities, we see that the formula has also been updated, and the data for household growth indicates that there's a 2.7% growth in stats, SA's 2021 GHS, and then bulk water, we're sitting at 8.9% average water bought by, and then for bulk electricity, we are 2.7% based on previously approved multi-year price determination, and of course the projected CPI for other costs. So the formula is then fully funded to account for the household growth and also cost increases over the MTA. If we go to the next slide, the DORA bill's ability to adequately fund municipalities who are in financial. What this then indicates to us is that the bill does not provide special grant funding for municipalities that are in financial distress. What it actually does, it provides a framework through which nationally raised revenues are divided between all the spheres. So municipalities, in terms of the assigned powers, are then able to ensure that they actually specifically take care of operations and maintenance and ensure that there's refurbishment and the provision of new bulk connect and reticulation networks to actually enable the municipalities then to generate revenue from their trading services. And this is broadly also funding that goes across all the 257 municipalities through the local government equitable share, which we all know is a Schedule 3 grant, and through other grants to specific municipalities for special purposes. And the way that the department then assists is through our municipal support improvement plans, so that we are able to also make a contribution to municipalities that are financially distressed. We move to the next slide. So in order for us to actually then deal with the challenges that have been identified, as I mentioned earlier, the department has developed a framework to actually guide the process of implementing and monitoring the municipal support and intervention plans. And we used the approach through an intergovernmental approach so that we are able to then focus on some of the key performance challenges as well within municipalities. So municipalities in financial distress are also then supported not only by COCTA, but also by National Treasury through the development of financial recovery plans. And in an effort to also deal with the challenges facing the municipalities, both National COCTA and National Treasury have also developed interventions that are collaborative in terms of our approach, especially when it comes to the Section 139 interventions. In terms of the detailed report on some of the actions that have been undertaken to assist municipalities, we go to the next slide. There are various programs ranging from the support that is also provided through our support agent BISA. So some of these relate to the water service authorities. There's 20 of them that we support with the implementation of water conservation and demand management. There are also five water services authorities that are supported with integration and prioritization of alignment of bulk and reticulation networks. There are 25 municipalities that are also provided with support on program management for labor intensive construction work as part of the presidential economic stimulus package. And then 44 districts that have also been supported to improve performance on the MEG program, and 15 municipalities supported to actually improve reliability of electricity and the implementation of performance monitoring electricity supply. So our department through the NDMC also provides support to municipalities who are unable to cope with the effects of a disaster through the disaster grant funding that is actually allocated after the grant conditions have been met. So with regards to the detailed report on some of the actions continued, MISA, also in collaboration with National Treasury, has initiated the budget facility infrastructure funding, and here 30 municipalities have attended the workshop in this regard. And subsequent to this workshop, MISA and the Infrastructure Fund are also assisting with the packaging of these projects. So together with DBSA, MISA has also introduced municipalities to the Infrastructure Acceleration Fund. This was previously called the Conditional Grants Staging, and the fund will also then further assist with the acceleration of infrastructure development for further engagements and ongoing with the municipalities. These engagements already have been ongoing to support and implement these new initiatives and reforms. So the initiatives we also believe will assist the municipalities that are financially distressed. And moreover, the department is also assisting municipalities, and we've identified 30 with the MSIG. And here the focus or emphasis based on the outcome of the AG report is to actually assess their data management practices guided by the municipal revenue related policies. And also more particularly, we are also looking at assisting them with data, a data management system. So the department is in collaboration with National Treasury, SAGA, DWS, and the Development Bank. And the department is also then directly involved as in the national interventions that I also have mentioned earlier. If we go to the next slide. So this provides for a detailed overview of the funding requirements for reconstruction and rehabilitation of both the public and private infrastructure that was damaged through the 2022 floods. So implementation is currently underway, and yes, we are experiencing some challenges with the implementation, in that there's been some delays. There's also the fact that the 6-month implementation period has already elapsed. However, the extension has been granted to the 31st of June. We've also had non-invocation of emergency procurement systems. And of course, there's also been non-implementation of the emergency procurement system that has also then delayed us in the, implementation of projects and expenditure. And also non-submission of performance and financial reports. So from an oversight perspective and to support the municipalities, we've put together some additional interventions. So there's some on-site project visits to monitor and guide the technical teams. There's also regular engagements with the accounting offices and executive management of provinces and municipalities. And these engagements are undertaken by the head of the NDMC. We've also then deployed MISA within the built environment with some professionals to actually support the municipalities with the flood damage assessments. And furthermore, we've also, through MISA, provided the public sector unit cost guidelines in collaboration with the University of Cape Town. And these have also been used to assess all the damage of the infrastructure as well as the funding applications. If you go to the next slide, you will then see a detailed report on the progress made in response to the floods and what has then been spent against what was allocated. So the two key provinces here are KZN and the Eastern Cape. And what you will see is that the initial implementation periods were between July and August and September to December and then to January. What is important about this slide is that of the allocation, the 516 million, only 185 million has been spent to date, which then gives us an idea that the expenditure has been low, particularly within the Port St. John's municipality, Etigwini, and also then Mbashe, and followed by Nyandeni. So even though the amounts have been transferred, there has been delay in the interventions by the municipalities. And of course, this is also due to some of the challenges that I had also mentioned earlier. So we are looking at providing additional support to these municipalities so that we do get their business, their finalized assessments and business cases that would justify their request, but over and above that, also assisting now with the implementation. We could move to the next slide. So where plans could also not be provided during the budget cycle, what the department has done is also then put forward through the budget adjustment process, the consideration of projects that could not be funded, and all the affected organs of state within to revise and confirm their projects, and where financial support was still required. And this then was also then done through the funding mechanisms of the disaster response grant, reallocation and reprioritization of funds, and also through donor support. And of course, there was a whole process that was also undertaken for unforeseen and unavoidable process. And this was really to make sure that all national organs of state confirm what their projects are and submit to National Treasury and then copy through to NDMC. And of course, also there's a whole approach that is used where the project is actually assessed at municipal level, comes through to the province, then to the NDMC, and then through to National Treasury. And the NDMC had also developed a circular that also just assisted with the procedures and the criteria. If we could move to the next slide. This is to do then with the disaster response grant and the municipal disaster recovery grant and the unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure. National Treasury approved an amount of 3.6 billion for reconstruction and rehabilitation of flood damages, as well as for the replenishment of the disaster response grant. If you look at this slide, it shows us how we have been allocated the 3.3 billion between KZN, Eastern Cape, and the Western Cape. And of course, what this slide also indicates is the replenishment for the disaster response grant. And you will see here that 247 million has been allocated to the municipal disaster response grant and 96 million to the provincial disaster response grant, totaling the 344 million. If we go to the next slide, there have also been some arrangements for transfers on the reconstruction and rehabilitation of funding. The engagements have been undertaken with municipalities and are still underway. We are also still finalizing implementation plans and the extent of the damages and the scope of work to then address the effects and the state of readiness for implementation of the projects. And the provincial teams have been established to actually assess the implementation plans of the municipalities. And the plans have also been assessed to check the technical viability of projects. And once the assessments are then completed, the transfers are then effected to the relevant municipalities. And municipalities are then expected to implement the projects in line with the grant frameworks. And we then monitor the progress as well as then report the financial and non-financial progress on the projects. So the NDMC, together with the PDMCs, continue to then monitor the projects, as well as in providing the additional support in areas where there is also persistent poor performance. And the department, through our local government operations branch, the NDMC and MISA, are also supporting Etiwini to accelerate the spending on the disaster funds. There are some key challenges that have also been identified with regards to the disaster grants. And we do, however, have some proposed interventions around these challenges. So for instance, there is failure to report on spending in terms of the prescribed procedures. And so the NDMC, taking into account its own resources, is engaging with each of the provinces that are not spending in the way that, not provinces, but municipalities that are not spending in the way that they should. And through strengthening of the actual response teams that we have provided as the department through MISA, we are hoping that we can accelerate the expenditure against the disaster grants. If we can then move to the municipal infrastructure grant, MIG. Here, what we see is the MIG expenditure performance as at December 2022. The allocation of the MIG budget is 16.8 billion. To date, we have transferred 10.2 billion and to all provinces, and the expenditure is at 6.4 billion. Which then gives us an indication that the expenditure is at 38%, and we know that by this time we should have been on 40% or more for this particular period. So for details of the actual MIG performance, we have also forwarded on an annexure that members can also then refer to. So there are a number of challenges that we have also identified with regards to expenditure on MEG. And of course, these relate to processes around procurement and then also interruptions by external forces. And of course, to help or to mitigate some of the challenges, we've engaged with the provincial treasuries to play an active role in supporting and advising municipalities around the implementation of procurement processes. We've also engaged law enforcement, and of course we need to mobilize them to really assist us with the business mafia challenges that we are having. And of course our LED strategies also need to be utilized much more to clearly indicate how communities can then benefit from the construction initiatives. Community liaison is also important, and this is something that needs to be improved. The other challenges also relate to capacity, priority setting, and some of the value chain responsibilities. So the MEC for local government and sectors therefore also need to ensure that they secure budgets to support their MIG responsibilities that were agreed in the MIG framework annually. And what also becomes important around capacity in municipalities is that we need to make sure or support municipalities in the appointments of their key positions, such as the municipal managers, the CFOs, and the technical director levels. We can move to the next slide. When we look at the integrated urban development grant, this provides for a detailed report on the financial performance of, as at the third quarter. The municipalities, there are 8 municipalities that are allocated the IUDG. So the total allocation is just sitting at over 1 billion. What's been transferred to date is 715 million. And what we have done is been tracking expenditure over the period up until December, which indicates that we have spent 355.
Recording stopped.
Million.
Recording in progress.
Indicates to us an overall spend of 33% against a transfer of 50, which also means that we are underperforming in terms of spending the IUDG grant. So if you go to the next slide, we also indicate what are some of the challenges in relation to expenditure. And that is slow progress on some of the sites to affect the targeted completion of projects. There's also poor performance by contractors. There's delays by local contractors. We also find that the panel of experts has expired. There's also delays in appointment of contractors, etc. So DCOG has conducted some intervention meetings in an effort to also assist the municipalities to address these issues. And as a result, both municipalities have also put measures in place to actually address the identified challenges and the progress that will need to be monitored through their monthly reports. If we can move to the Municipal Systems Improvement Grant. This slide gives us an indication of the MSIG performance since 2017, 2018 to date. We see that there's been a growth in the allocation of 103 million up to 146 million in this, 140 million for this financial year. What the spend per year, what it's also indicating is that we've had a drop in spend, but that has also been through the challenges around COVID. But I think over and above that is also knowing and understanding exactly what the MSIG can be utilized for. So we did have a lull or delay, but this is something that we are looking at and wanting to ensure that we improve into the next financial year. The department, however, even though there has been challenges, has committed to adopt a forward planning approach on the MSIG. And of course, we have identified, as I've mentioned earlier, some of the projects for which we are now utilizing the MSIG funds so that we are able to be in a better position to also support municipalities. And the ones that are high up are the data management and also the system. If we can then move to the next slide on the local government equitable share. So on the local government equitable share, all transfers to municipalities have been done according to the National Treasury approved payment schedule. 256 municipalities have received their transfers, except one, which is Kareaburg local municipality. So far, the first tranche was just over 33 billion. And the second tranche was just over 26 billion. And the number of municipalities to which we have transferred, we've also indicated that there are 67 municipalities that have also received their second tranche. And these were then transferred during December. There are The local government equitable share challenges and remedial actions. The main challenge here that we're also experiencing is just the notice period for ad hoc payments, which puts a bit of pressure on us as DCOG from an administrative perspective, but we are liaising with National Treasury to assist us with this challenge. So we do have agreement between ourselves and Treasury. So if we can then move to the next slide, because the table actually depicts what we had said earlier. This slide references all the annexures that we've also provided, which members can then reference on our DCOG, MISA, and DTA financial and non-financial performance up to quarter three. This slide then, as per the request of the committee, indicates the status of vacancies within the department. We are sitting at a vacancy rate of 13.7%. It is deemed high, but that is due to the restructuring that we have done on our operating model within the department. And of course, this is also a moving target, in that we are currently filling quite a number of positions. So on a daily basis, we are also seeing the change to the actual vacancy rate, or should I say the reduction on the vacancy rate. What members also need to note is, as much as we are also filling positions, some positions that are being filled are also as a result of promotions internally. So 20 of the 31 vacancies are also due to the internal promotions, which means we then have to start the process. And of course, it's also an ongoing process. I think the important thing for us to also track is the fact that most positions have been advertised and most positions have also been shortlisted, which means that we have to then place a lot of more emphasis or focus on interviewing the position. Another question that was also asked was the status of invoices, and we are reporting that for DTA and MISA, all invoices have been paid within 30 days. However, within the department, we had one invoice during the month of June that was not paid on time. However, all invoices have been paid. If we then go to the next slide, this is our final slide. We then recommend to the committee to note the presentation and all the areas that it has covered. And perhaps for me to also say, we also have noted the additional questions that we had also received from the committee through their research. And of course, we also do have some responses around that, but we'll be guided in by the chairperson on how it is that we should also be handling that. So thank you very much, chairperson.
Thank you so much for the presentation. I'm not very sure whether DM is there, but let me again welcome our
recording brand new, stopped.
Brand new deputy ministers, DM Prince Ben Namashe. Congratulations, Prince, and also congratulate and welcome DM Park Tau to COGTA. Thank you very much, and thank you very much for that presentation. Can I then request?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Well.
Recording in progress.
From SALGA, I'm told Councillor Tekgale is leading the delegation. As I said, that will take both presentations and then allow honorable members to interact with the presentations after we have finished. Councillor Dikgale.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And we'll want to take this opportunity also to greet the Honorable Committee. Take this opportunity also, Chairperson, to greet and congratulate the new team of COCTA, starting with the Minister and the two Deputy Ministers. As SALGA, we are proud, Chair, that the Minister and the Deputy Minister are former presidents of SALGA. And that to us, it shows that kind of intimate understanding of local government that we believe is going to assist this important sphere of governance to deal with its current immense challenges that we are supposed to deal with. We want to further indicate
Councillor Dikgale.
Do you hear me, Chair?
I can hear you very well. Just as a side comment, I can see a revolving door from SALGA to COCTA. Continue.
Yeah, no, that door is very good for us. we also want to introduce the team that I'm with today. We are having our acting chief officer, Ubabu Zamu Kwala. We're also having our specialist in infrastructure finance, James Matsi, who will be doing the presentation on behalf of SALGA. We're also having Bernard Mokhabudi, who is also a specialist in fiscal policy. For us, this presentation will be dealing with some key issues that I think I'll just highlight and my team will take us through. The key ones is in terms of the current energy crisis, which I believe, Chair, is hitting local government badly. And we believe if nothing is done, particularly to ensure that the damage that is caused by load shedding is somehow mitigated, it may make local government to find it difficult to deal with its responsibility of service delivery, because electricity generally is part of our revenue raising mechanism, particularly in big cities and secondary cities. We further want to indicate that we are happy that there is an increase that is taking place, but as part and parcel of the team of FFC, we are looking at a way of dealing with the general challenge faced by local government in relation to funding, which we believe that if you are having 46% of the responsibilities of governance, you can be getting 10% and be expected to fulfill your constitutional and service delivery obligations. So we are looking at that and working with FFC and with, of course, the blessings of the presidency, because they are in agreement that it is important that we deal with that. And the document will then be submitted in that regard. We further want to indicate that we want to thank Treasure in terms of taking Eskom debt. I think that was an important intervention, looking into the impact that it was having on the municipal finances, particularly the interest, Chair, charged and the payments structure between Eskom and municipalities is not right, because you find that during the month of on the 17th, you are supposed to be paying Eskom, but your monthly bills are paid around 25. So we are working around that so that the final analysis, Eskom and local government are in sync in terms of how we should be managing this process. And we will be also indicating our campaign on ensuring that we call for responsible citizenry, whereby our seashore campaign will be reminding our people that there is no way that local government can function without their contribution, particularly paying for the services that we are offering as local government. So that Asisho campaign is there and continue to ensure that we do our work. And finally, we want to indicate that the solar intervention tax incentive chair, as a local government, we are not 100% happy because we are looking at it in a manner that says, if this incentive works well, it may remove most of our paying customers, because most of the people who afford these solar rooftops are generally your paying customers who are subsidizing the poor and those who are unable to pay. So it's a double-edged sword for us. It reduces the issue of load shedding, but at the same time, it deals with our revenue. And then as local government, we are saying government and treasury must be able to look into that and be able to be careful not to put local government under the bus in this regard. But generally, James Matsi will take us through the details of the report, and at the end, we'll then engage as a team. Thank you very much, James. You can take over.
Thank you, Councillor Dikgale, through you. Good morning, honorable members, honorable minister, honorable DMs as well, colleagues. My name is James Madie, and I will be doing the presentation. Also, in the interest of my bandwidth, Chair, I would like to just show my face for introductory purposes, but I will then remove the camera during the presentation.
Perfect. Continue, Mr. Matsia.
Thank you so much, Chair. So in terms of the outline of our presentations, Chair, and Councillor Dikgale has outlined our presentation quite well. The first part of the presentation will deal with the legislative processes and the consultations we do as SALDA. We believe that the Eskom energy crisis is very critical for this portfolio because ultimately the funding for the sector will be affected. We will briefly touch on the macroeconomic outlooks. We will then delve into the actual positions of the sector in terms of the bill itself, and then we'll conclude. So in terms of the presentation, the purpose of the presentation, of course, the request by the portfolio, by the select committee was for SALGA to provide its views on the Division of Revenue Bill. And in terms of the constitutional and legislative background, we observe first and foremost that the constitution actually requires that organized local government should be consulted. And the Division of Revenue also provides some of the factors on which SALGA should be consulted. And then in terms of the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act, of course, most of our engagements, Chair, happen through this process in the budget forum where the three spheres meet and where SALGA represents local government as well. And then in terms of the outline and the consultations and engagements that we've had leading up to the point where the minister made his speech and the bill was published, we've had a lot of interactive engagements with the sector. We have had our technical engagements. We had our budget forum, not only in October, but also in January as well. We've made comments to the bill and to the clauses as well. So first and foremost, Chair, in terms of the energy crisis, and really this is a crisis that we argue that is equivalent, if not more critical than the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic. We've observed that during load shedding, Chair, municipalities are experiencing a range of negative impacts. For example, there is increased theft of infrastructure such as cables. Vandalism is rampant when there's no power. The damage to electricity distribution networks, especially substations, is high due to extensive switching off. There's also increase in equipment failure, where equipment is not designed for frequent switching. There's also cable fault increases due to high loads after restoration of supply of electricity. And with our preliminary estimations is that approximately 150,000 to 250,000 per day is lost due to this impact. There's also medium voltage switch gear failure as well. Approximately 50,000 250,000 is the cost for this. And of course, there's also damage and lack of functioning of water supply and wastewater treatment works as well, resulting in the inability of municipalities to pump, to supply water services. There's also huge financial implications of utilizing backup power for wastewater treatment works as well. And then in terms of the negative impacts of load shedding, from our engagements with the municipalities, we can already observe that in terms of the loss of sales of revenue, cities incur a loss of income due to unsaved energy, whereby the overall average direct loss ranges from about 3 million to 6 million per stage load shedding per day. Overtime budgets are high. Switching operators and control officers who are performing network switching operations and restoring supply after equipment damage and theft and vandalism incidents are costing between 60 to 80,000 per day per load shedding. There is also ultimately declining economic activities, businesses closing, people losing jobs. This will definitely have a direct impact in terms of the indigency in our municipalities. And then of course, SALGA taking cognizance of the challenges faced by the country due to load shedding as a result of failing generation infrastructure and lack of maintenance to Eskom's generation fleet and efforts to end the persistent load shedding. Load shedding is further incentivizing paying customers to seek alternative options for their energy needs, as is evidenced by the speed at which larger energy users are going off-grid. The result is declining revenue for municipalities. Load shedding overall has had a negative impact to the country and municipalities, not only in terms of revenue, but also in terms of additional expenditure, damage and vandalism to infrastructure, theft of electricity over time, and so on. And of course, also observing the incentive that was introduced through the bill, and that was made by the Minister of Finance during his budget speech. What we observe, Chair, is that ultimately, this proposed incentive for installation of solar panels will encourage more migration from grid to renewable energy. It will erode the most important revenue source for municipalities. The initiative only benefits a certain class, middle class, who are high energy consumers and who can afford to install alternative energy options. And these consumers, they form a significant portion of municipal rate payers. They contribute towards municipal revenue. This will mean that poor households will be the only ones that are left in terms of what is available as customers for municipalities. The increase in the uptake of renewable energy and changes in consumer demand for electricity will affect not only the city finances, but also the city's ability to cross-subsidize low-income residential customers as well. And then in terms of the surcharges, Chair, we want to recommend that we be consulted on the norms and standards to regulate municipal charges, surcharges on electricity. And on the Eskom debt takeover and tariff, indeed, we welcome the proposed debt relief measures for municipalities as it relates to Eskom debt takeover, but we will await the circular for conditions with the conditions for municipalities from Treasury, and we do hope that we will be consulted as the circular is finalized. We also, Chair, welcome efforts by Treasury to cushion the equitable share against additional funding shortfalls due to the Eskom tariff increases of 18.65% approved by ANERSA. But we want to reiterate that this tariff increase completely obliterates the ability of the municipalities to generate revenue from electricity services. And then in terms of our recommendations, Chair, on the energy crisis, we support the interventions contained in the Energy Action Plan, but these interventions need to include a study to quantify the impact of load shedding on municipalities. This should include municipal revenue, damage to electricity distribution networks, especially substations, due to excessive switching because of load shedding, funding for alternative energy supply for critical facilities like water treatment plants, and theft and vandalism of infrastructure linked to load shedding. And then in terms of the macroeconomic and fiscal policy
outlook, recording stopped.
SALGA acknowledges firstly that the government fiscal consolidation strategy to reduce this fiscal deficit over the medium term. And we also observe that the 2023-4 budget outlines fiscal risks at the national and provincial level, yet these risks have the most detrimental effect on municipalities and their ability to deliver on their constitutional mandates to provide basic services. And our recommendations, Chair, here are that we suggest that the medium-term budget surpluses must be used to allocate money to local government. We also recommend that, that the government not hurt economic growth while trying to lower debt service costs through a stricter fiscal consolidation strategy. This is so that the benefits of this strategy, which must go to social spending, including local government, should be matched by customers who can pay for municipal services as well. And then in terms of the organized local government comments on the bill itself, Chair, first and foremost, we acknowledge that though the allocation to local government increased by 14 billion, organized local government assess that the structural underfunding of the local sphere of government and the realization of the aspirations contained in the white paper on local government of 1998 cannot be attained by a slight increase in local government's share of nationally raised revenue, considering the financial pressures that municipalities face. And of course, on this slide, Chair, just to appreciate first and foremost that we believe that we've really shifted the needle in terms of lobbying government to finally give us the opportunity to look at how we can reconsider the allocations to the sector. One of the resolutions that were made at the 2022 Local Government Summit mandated us to take a leading role in determining the ideal fiscal allocation to the local government sphere. Work has been undertaken to this end. We've collaborated with the FFC in the production of a base document that makes recommendations on the horizontal allocation of nationally raised revenue. More work still needs to be taken under this program. We are still seized with a study on the cost of running a business of a municipality. We also are going to determine the ideal percentage of nationally raised revenue to be allocated to local government. And of course, we also will be liaising with our IGFR stakeholders in terms of a project plan leading up to the 2023 budget forum. Preliminary findings will be presented at the budget forum after in-depth consultations with other stakeholders as well. And then in terms of the review of local government legislation, we definitely back initiatives and efforts to review laws to improve governance in municipalities. This will lead to less bureaucracy and better ways to manage money and provide services. SALGA is participating in all intergovernmental forums aimed at improving performance in municipalities. And in terms of some of the updates in policies by the department, which we welcome, organized local government supports the update of the municipal borrowing policy framework. We also, Chair, welcome the approval of the Municipal Powers, Fiscal Powers and Functions Amendment Bill, as it will enable municipalities to levy development charges without regulatory obstacles. And then in terms of some of the pertinent issues by SALGA not mentioned in the 2023 budget, we have to admit that we are disappointed that the budget makes no mention of the government taking action or intervening in addressing debts owed to municipalities by government departments. We also note that these departments do not prioritize budgeting for their municipalities as well. We have also noted with concern, Chair, that particularly with the municipalities that are at cross-border of the country, there's a lot of challenges that these municipalities are encountering.
Recording in progress.
Unconfirmed and illegal immigration. And we really do hope that we really do believe that with consultations with national government, we'll find a way of prioritizing some allocation to these municipalities in order to ease the burden of migration that is happening in those areas. And then, of course, just to also note and to inform the committee about the SALGA's Asisho campaign. We launched this campaign in July 2022. It is a nationwide citizen responsibility campaign. And the campaign aims to educate members of local communities about their duties and obligations towards the social and economic upliftment of their local areas by paying for municipal services rendered to them. And of course, we plan to extend this campaign to also deal with government debt, which we feel is a low-hanging fruit and should not be escalating. And then in terms of the other points that we wanted to raise, particularly on the infrastructure grants, Chair, we wanted to raise concerns about the conversion of grants. Since the 2021 October budget forum, SALGA has noted with national concern national government's drive to convert municipal grants to Schedule 6 indirect grants. A case in point being the attempt by COGTA in 2021 to make 6B, to turn MIG into MIG 6B, and the attempt by the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture to increase the indirect core portion or the sports component of the of MIG from 300 million to 400 million in 2022, though there's already observations that municipalities are improving in terms of investing in infrastructure for sports facilities. There was also a decision by the Department of Human Settlements to make the municipal emergency housing grant an indirect grant in 2023. And to mention that particularly with this last one, there was really no consultation, Chair, and it was more a question of us being informed that this decision has been taken. And then of course, we also want to, with regards to grant, just appreciate the mutual work that we've done with departments in terms of SALGA advocating for the inclusion of technology and innovation as part of local government water and sanitation infrastructure grant frameworks. We are happy that at least the departments definitely were in agreement with us in this initiative. The rationale for the above is informed by, amongst others, the following: absence of direct funding in the current fiscal instruments to municipalities for deployment of innovative solutions, inadequate funding by municipalities for the deployment of innovative solutions. And to this end, we welcome the inclusion of technology and innovation as part of following the local government water and sanitation infrastructure grant frameworks, the municipal infrastructure grant, the regional bulk and water services infrastructure grant, respectively. And going forward, Chair, we will work very close with COGTA and DWS to facilitate the implementation of the included provisions in the said frameworks. And then in conclusion, Chair, I guess we could not come to Parliament without flighting this slide in terms of the appreciation of what gets allocated to the sector. As Councillor Dikgale indicated, that yes, there's increases that, but when you look at the responsibilities of the sector, and we've raised this in the past, local government is responsible for 46% of the constitutional functions. Between the three spheres. Yet when you look at what is allocated to local government, we still believe that it is not enough considering the responsibility that is bestowed on the sector. And of course, those responsibilities further to highlight them in terms of the objects of local government, to provide democratic and accountable government for local communities, to ensure the provision of services to communities in a sustainable manner, to promote social and economic development, to promote a safe and healthy environment, to encourage the involvement of communities and organizations in the matters of local government. A municipality must strive to do all these objects within its financial and administrative capacity to achieve the objects set out in subsection one. All of these will not be achieved in totality with the limited allocations made to local government from the nationally raised revenue. And in terms of the conclusions on the 2023 budget and DOR bill, we do welcome the 11% or 14% upward revision of the cross allocation to local government for the 2023-24 financial year, the upward adjustment in the outer years of the MTF cycle of 6.3 billion and or 5%, 45.5 billion in the 2024-25 and 2025-26 financial year respectively are also welcomed. SALGA supports the refinement of the local government equitable share formula in an effort to arrive at a cost-reflective basis for rendering basic municipal services as articulated in the 2022 medium-term budget policy statement. SALGA acknowledges the government's takeover of ESCOM debts and awaits the circular for conditions on municipal debt relief. SALGA supports an integrated approach to local government capability development led by National Treasury and supports the update to the municipal borrowing policy framework and the approval of the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Amendments Act, that the upward trajectory in local government allocations from nationally raised revenue be maintained in order to realize the aspirations contained in the 1998 white paper on local government in respect of subsidizing the provision of basic services. Organized local government anticipates that future allocations to local government will take into consideration the reduced revenue-raising capabilities of municipalities due to persistent load shedding and above inflation increases in electricity bulk electricity tariffs. The local government summit noted that there is a disequilibrium in the allocation of resources versus allocation of functions, and SALGA is working on developing the ideal allocation of nationally raised revenue for local government. And in terms of the recommendations, Chair, we recommend that the stakeholders in the IGFR relations support the recommendations of the local government summit for SALGA to propose an ideal allocation of nationally raised revenue to local government. It be included in the consultations on the circular dealing with the conditions for debt relief for municipalities. SALGA be consulted on the norms and standards to regulate municipal charges on electricity.
Recording stopped.
2024-25 budget consultation processes address the following: government debt owed to municipalities, fiscal and service delivery pressures on border municipalities, reversal of emergency housing grants to local government, that any consolidation of conditional grants, Chair, should be Schedule 5, and we avoid making our grants Schedule 6. And that's the end of our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Matsia, with that presentation after Councillor Dikgale. What we'll do now, all members, you know how we do it. I would like to get the indications of all members who would like to interact with the presentations. Pose your question, you'll indicate who is the question for. Is it for the minister and COCTA, or is it for Councillor and SALGA? Thank you very much. Let's hear who wants to have the first bite. Our members? Okay, the other members who are presenting me, text, they are really struggling. Perhaps let me, hello, oral members, anybody? Okay, you need a song. Come again. Hello. Okay, can everybody else mute so that I can see if the oral members would like to come in? Okay. But they're busy sending me questions on the side. And perhaps let me start with those questions that are busy sending to me on my text. Can I ask everybody to mute, please? Okay. Let me check. There's the questions from Honorable Sheikh. It's for Salga. What measures will you put in place to ensure stability in local government? In light of coalition's failing? I think you got to that. Second question from Honorable Sheikh is, what measures will you, this goes to COCTA. What measures will your department put in place to stop the high levels of tender rigging, resulting in prices being escalated with no value for, for the consumers? The example that Honorable Sheikh likes making is where you buy a bottle of water with a 500 milliliter water with a price which is even higher than the one that you got in a restaurant. Again, to COCTA, will the department consider a credible, transparent process ensuring all tenders and contracts awarded are being advertised in local communities with details of value, of contract items, billing names of companies and directors to deter corruption and contract for pulse. Again, it's about transparent. Another question. Local municipalities are spending large sums on legal costs with political parties fighting each other. How will you minimize end or prevent this? I think that goes to both Salga and the department. Then Honorable Nkwangwa. How will SALGA address the weaknesses in delivery of services? Is at local government. Question number two from Honorable Nkwangwa. Will you consider this SALGA lifestyle audit on political office bearers and senior officials to prevent corruption? All members, are there members on the platform again would like to come in before I take my set of questions?
Yes, Chair.
Honorable Kaiso, please, please come in.
Yes, Chair. Let me also take the cue to congratulate the new minister, Minister Gardening, and your team, Deputy Minister. And thank for the presentation that it has been made to before this committee. Honorable Chair, let me ask a number of questions here to start with Coopta. The Auditor General, AG, reported that for the 2021-22 financial year, 70% of municipalities used over 1 billion across the country to procure financial consultants, and 5.3 billion in the past 5 years have been used for the same purpose. So, what has been done to build internal financial capacity? Ability and capacity for the municipalities to avert the reliance on financial consultants, has been my question. The second one is, does the department not think that this is a very expensive exercise that does not have a return on investment? So the third question is, the AG reported, even with the huge expenditure on financial consultants, around 58% of financial statements submitted had material misstatements from the work that consultants were paid to do. So in other words, no value is derived from the payments of these consultants to prepare financial statements, and these are not credible. So my question will be, what measures are in place to assist municipalities that are struggling to generate revenue on their own to ensure greater sustainability and financial viability of municipalities? This question I will also apply to South. And my next question would be, has the department identified impactful municipalities that require critical infrastructure for basic services. In which provinces are these located? My fifth question would be, what are the mitigating measures in place to limit the increasing debt incurred from the water authorities by municipalities who do not have water licenses to purchase directly from the department? So my last, my sixth question, how is the department working with the provinces to strengthen its political oversight as it relates to the irregular tabling of unfunded budget? Because this one has happened in several municipalities. So, if I'm allowed, Chairperson, I assume that I'm taking the minute of other members who have apologized. According to the Financial Management Act, MFMA regulations, a municipal budget must be balanced. The projected expenditure must be the same as the projected funds to be received by the municipality. But in 2022-23 financial year, 98 municipalities adopted unfunded
recording budget. In progress.
This places municipalities at a huge financial risk. So, two questions. What are the relevant details to assist these municipalities in adopting unfunded budgets? What early detection or control measures are in place? And my last one, Chair, is millions of households that are eligible for the free services do not get them as a result of the dysfunctional registration system of the indigenous household. With the rising cost of living, this is affecting the poor as a result of that. Therefore, they have to choose between buying food and paying for municipality services. What is the department doing to improve indigenous registration process? What are the relevant details and timeline to correct them? So thank you very much, Chair. Let me end my input here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso. Any other oral member?
Chair.
Honorable Tangwini, please come in.
Thank you, Chair. My one question was just asked by the Honorable Kaiso last in terms of the indigenous households. If we can have a clear plan, what is the clear plan of the municipality in terms of sorting out the registration crisis within the indigenous households and the corruption pertaining to the registration thereof, in ensuring that our poor households are accessing these services within the set time and the amount that is they are supposed to get. And then what is the COCTA's plan and SALGA's plan to solve the unauthorized expenditure within municipalities? You know, for example, Emfuleni municipality have an unauthorized expenditure of 2.7 billion. So what is the immediate plans of this department to sort out this unauthorized expenditure within all municipalities across the board within our country? Our municipalities are in dire, they are collapsing, and our people are not getting the services they ought to get. And we can't forever blame instability or coalition governance. The COCTA and SALGA need to be at the forefront of solving out these issues and stop shifting the goalpost. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ntlangwini. Any other oral member? Okay, let me come in and against John. My colleagues in welcoming the presentations. which are quite illuminating, but at the same time, raise a lot of questions and challenges the local government sphere is facing. So the first question, mainly I think this goes to Cocta, Minister. I'm saying, why must the local government equitable share be transferred when certain conditions are met? The national and the provincial equitable shares are transferred without conditions. As you would know, this leads to a high level of underspending with dire consequences to our people who need these services. Again, this is to Cocta. Yeah, I think one of my of my colleagues, I think that was Honorable Price has raised this one. We're saying that it's about the unfunded budgets. Perhaps just to add, why is that allowed? And what type of a stick do we have to try and stop this thing? Because that's where that comes the genesis of the problem of adverse audit finding. Then Salga, the question of electricity, it's a big one. And I think the point that you are making is quite valid, especially about the negative effect of what might happen about people moving off the grid to the revenue of municipalities. So, but I just wanted to check, what progress are we making in terms of electricity generation in municipalities from the time that the minister allowed this to happen and so on? Are we making any progress? What type of hurdles are we experiencing, if any? Because I think it's one of the very important things. It will this will help one in ensuring security of electricity supply, but again, investments in the municipalities and employment creation. Perhaps talking about this, Honorable Minister, the question of ERRP is for everybody. It's not just for national government. And the question of economic transformation is for everybody, not just for national government. I just want to check that at local government, especially after the Concord finding that institutions should have their own, I'll say, transformation policies, of just being guided by the PPFA and the Constitution. Is there any progress that is happening there? I'll tell you why I'm asking this. I'm afraid that this will lead to further exclusion of the previous disadvantaged people from participating in the economy. So I just want to say what problem, and perhaps Saka, you may also want to assist there, knowing that usually we do talk about the capacity of municipalities in general, but capacity, for instance, to draft such policies and for them, so that they are able to implement economic transformation. There's a budget, Salga. There's a budget of about 70 billion rand for indigents. We always get a complaint that many indigents don't have access to this budget or services which are funded by this budget. What's your comment? And if the statement is true, what are we doing about it? Is this the most optimal way of trying to help the poorest of the poor? We understand, Salka, and we agree with you in your welcoming the intervention that national government through the Minister of Finance is doing as far as solving the debt or helping solve the debt of municipalities at Eskom or at municipalities, the Eskom debt. But the Minister of Finance have raised the a concern that the proposed intervention is not a panacea to our problems. His fear is that after having intervened and assisted with the current debt, municipalities will start accumulating the debt again, saying that it's sort of this sort of create the moral hazard problem like we see in the SOEs. Your comment on that statement, and two, how do you think we can prevent that so that it doesn't recur? There's a debt intervention by national government, goes to the sovereign debt, but what happens after that? Aren't we going to see again those municipalities starting accumulating this debt? Those would be our questions. If there's no other oral member who would like to come in, I will request Salka to start responding to the questions, and then Councillor Dehale and your team, I request you to start and answering the questions that you think are directed to you. And after that, I'll then request Kota, the Minister, Minister Karine, with your team to respond to the to the questions that would have been raised and directed to your good selves. Salka?
No, thank you very much, Chair. I will take most of the question. I think I will leave one on generation for James to finalize on. We are in agreement with Honorable Sheikh that the matter of failure of collusion is a problem that Salka has already identified. And as we indicated in one of our engagement with local government and stakeholders, is that we have developed a framework, Honorable Chair, that clearly indicates how collusions should be run. We believe with the help of COCTA, we should work together towards ensuring that we give legal credence to the framework. I'm happy that there is also a process that the Parliament has taken to go and research also on how collusion should work in South Africa, maybe including at national and provincial level. Because we believe, as Salka, what we have brought on board as part of our framework, if enforceable, it will minimize the current challenges relating to collusion. For example, Chair, as Salka, we believe that where there is no outright majority, we should use the executive system, whereby the mandate given by the people through the number of votes and seats got by political parties are reflected in their participation in the executive making decisions within that municipality. So I think our approach, if agreed to, will minimize the current challenges that collusions are posing to our municipalities and local government sector in general. For example, in eThekwini, we know they've been using the approach of executive committee. You can see that whatever challenge they face is not as extreme as you'll see in Guruleni, in Tshwane, and in Joburg. So that is why we believe that our framework will work in this regard. On the issue of lawfare by political parties. We must agree, honorable members, that in South Africa, when political parties loses their battle on the ground, they revert to legal battle. And it is difficult for SALGA as an association to mitigate against such, because each and every political party has its own objective strategies and tactics that they use. And we must indicate that we'll continue to engage with all political parties, particularly at local government level, to make sure that we adhere to the latent spirit of local government legislative framework in ensuring that we continue with our mandate of serving our people, other than grandstanding that is happening from time to time. We welcome lifestyle audits. It's a good thing because it also will give the kind of credibility that our society will want to see in their leaders. We don't have any problem, and we'll encourage local government leaders to do that on their own so that they show course that indeed they work for the community.
Recording stopped.
Nothing other than that. On the issue of the indigent register, we will continue to engage with our municipalities to ensure that in lieu of the current level of unemployment caused by economic downturns and exacerbated by the COVID, we use the indigent registers, because it is a good way of getting sufficient funding for poor households to get the necessary basic services. It is just a misnomer from SALGA's point of view that why are some municipalities not doing it? Because it is an important funding that assists municipalities to carry out their constitutional duty. But we'll continue to encourage those that have been seen the necessity and the importance of ensuring that they have a credible indigent register, which will help with the necessary funding that they need. When it comes to UIFNW, which is unauthorized, irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we believe that our intervention that we are doing, we are also having different companies that are working with to develop strong controls within the controlled environment, particularly around your supply chain and the ability to adhere to regulations as indicated by National Treasurer. We are having different workshops. We are calling in our CFOs, supply chain managers, in order to build that kind of understanding. Even this week, Chair, we are having a seminar on professionalization of local government that will be ending today. The objective there is to make sure that we follow the letter and spirit of the law in terms of how we should manage our controlled environment. So as SALGA will continue to ensure that we engage with our municipalities in order to ensure that the UIFNW are not only reduced, but are completely eradicated, because it is unnecessary. It brings question to the credibility and morality of the sector. So we will continue through our different seminars, workshops, and other portfolio-related programs that we are having as SCOM. Finally, Chair, we want to indicate, man, that when it comes to ESCOM debt, the only challenge that local government faces is the structure that we have between ESCOM and municipalities in terms of how we should pay ESCOM. We need to deal with two important aspects, Chair. The first one is, when should ESCOM be paid? And secondly, the interest. If you look at the debt, you can see that the portion of interest is so high, it is just unacceptable. So if we can deal with these two, where we make arrangements that the payment should go together with how the municipal revenue processes works, firstly. Secondly, the issue of interest should not just be a way of a punitive engagement with local government in order to make sure that in the final analysis, we are able to have municipalities paying ESCOM, because we do have municipalities who are paying very well in terms of what is expected. So it is not going to be a general problem. And as SALCA, and as part of our responsibility, because it is us who are lobbying for this debt relief, we'll go back to our municipalities and indicate the importance of ring fencing electricity bills, so that in the final analysis, there is no more new unnecessary debt that will confront us in future. Thank you very much, Chair. I think I'll pause there and allow James to deal with the issue of electricity generations in local municipalities.
Chair, if you may allow me, Zamo Gwala, I'm gonna deal with that matter. Chairperson of the committee, my name is Zamo Gwala. I'm part of SALCA. I'm acting as the Chief Officer for Municipal Finance. So I want to respond to two questions in the main. The one that deals with the issue of generations, we were asked why municipalities are not moving into that space of own generation as it has been approved. So I'm going to respond to that one. I'll also just add a bit on the issue of management of the indigent customers of municipalities. So Chair, you'll remember, some of us in terms of the age will remember that back in the days, some of our municipalities used to have their own substations. I remember that municipalities like City of Johannesburg, Cape Town, Ethekwini, Durban then, used to have their own power stations. Some of them have closed down. Now, if you look at the current dispensation and you ask a question, why municipalities are not generating their own power, we'll all agree that when you look at the balance sheet of our most municipalities, they cannot afford to build their own power stations. That's a fact. So the balance sheet is too weak for them to set up their own power generation infrastructure. However, there's an alternative to that, that you can actually buy power from independent producers or from what we call embedded generators, people who generate power for their own use, they can then sell back to the grid. I'm happy to announce or to advise Chair that City of Johannesburg, City of Cape Town, and City of Ekurhuleni, as few examples, they have already issued invitation to those power producers to sell to the municipalities to help supplement what they are buying from ESCOM. So those processes are taking place. The delay that happened in that regard was for us as municipalities to clarify some of the requirements in terms of municipal Finance Management Act, but we are in the go. But as you can see, that there's still that limitation. If you look at the ones that I've just mentioned, they are all metros. The challenge is that the smaller municipalities, financially, they are still struggling in that regard. So what we are helping as SALCA is that we have observed that in other municipalities, especially smaller municipalities, you'll find that in one end of the town, there's a company that is able to generate power and use it for its own purpose. But when they've got access, they want to sell to company B, which is on the other side of the town. And in doing so, they have to use the infrastructure.
Recording in progress.
Distribution and reticulation infrastructure that belongs to the municipality. And what there's a tariff that the municipality should be charging in that regard is called a wheeling tariff. What we have observed is that most of our municipalities lack the capacity to design correct tariffs to provide the wheeling processes. So from SALCA point of view, we have taken upon ourselves to go around and assist our municipalities to design correct tariffs for wheeling purposes. Because if you do that correctly, we certainly can be able to supplement some of the income that will come from that power distribution between individual users, as it were. coming to the issue of indigent, I agree with the question really that the things as they happen at the moment, the at municipal level, there is a lot of people who qualify to be in the system, but they are left out. And there are people who are in the system that do not qualify to be there. So as SALCA, our chief digital officer has been running around the country. I think he has now met with more than 50 municipalities looking at the databases and the systems that they are using. What he figured out is that most of the system and databases are so manual in nature that they are not dynamic. Because when a person finds employment elsewhere and you need to be able to identify that quickly and be able to update the system, it doesn't take care of that. And if a person loses work and he wants to be registered as such, it takes that long. So we are working very well with municipalities to help them to develop those databases that are able to assist in that regard. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Minister and your team, please come in.
Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable Mlenza.
Your indulgence, please.
Okay.
You know what I'm doing, Chairperson, reminds me what we used to do when we were still young during the students' politics, where you would, as you come in a meeting, your hand is already up raising order, not even knowing what is it that is being discussed. Your indulgence, honestly. I was actually trying to multitask throughout the meeting. So I was touching and losing as the meeting was flowing. However, as the minister comes in, just one thing which I wanted to throw in, just to check. This ring fencing of funding so as to assist these municipalities such that they are able to honor their dues correctly. How legal is it, Minister? I know you grew up from within the system up to where you are now. How legal would it be if, as we begin to budget for the municipalities, the ring fencing is done at that level, wherein it is just a reflection that municipality A is receiving this much, but is channeled to pay the dues so that it does not even touch base with the municipal, with the municipality. I just wanted to check on that, Chair. Otherwise, I've been listening particularly when the responses were being made. I had already joined the meeting. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mlenzana. I'll request the Honorable Minister to please come in.
Chair.
Yes, Honorable Tlangwini.
I think my question and Honorable Kaiso's question was not properly answered by Mr. Tikhale, and I think maybe the minister must also speak to it. In terms of what is the plans of the Indigenous Register in rooting out corruption and seeing to that people are effectively registered? I think the clumsy answer Mr. Tikhale have given, We can't take. The minister must give us a clearer picture what is going to happen. It's a lot of money that is going into that program, and our people ought to get the services of that program. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Dlamini. Honorable Minister, perhaps that's why I requested you to come after SALCA so that you and department can pick up on those that would not have been satisfactorily answered. Honorable Minister, please come in.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, and thank you for the questions. I'm going to request the team led by the DG, various DGs and directors to be the ones to start. I think we have noted the questions on who is supposed to respond to them. Myself and DMs may conclude at the end of that. And Honorable Tlangwini, as I come in, I'll also make an emphasis on the issue of the indigent household registration process that might have not been sufficiently covered by SALCA. With your permission, Chair, can the DG and the team start to respond and I'll come through.
Please proceed.
No, thank you, Minister. So perhaps maybe just to start with all the technical aspects. So I will ask Mr. Sigaba to start with the equitable chair, and then I will ask Mr. Hutton to look at the legal fees issue and then the training issue as well. And I will then come in after. Thank you, Chair. Your indulgence.
Yes.
Mr. Sigaba?
Yes, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, our Honorable Ministers and Deputy Ministers, DG and colleagues. The Honorable Chair raised a question on the fact that why do national and provincial equitable share not having conditions and the local government equitable share has conditions? To speak the honest truth, Chair, the local government equitable share also does not have conditions. What normally would happen is that in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, I think Section 21 and also Section 26 of the Constitution, it does happen that because municipalities are abusing the conditional grants, so in other words, they would use now conditional grants for purposes other than the purpose for which they are meant. I'll make an example for them. They would use the unspent municipal infrastructure grant to finance their operational expenditure. And as such, they, when it comes to the end of the year, normally when you have not spent your funds as a municipality, you are supposed to, that's supposed to be reflected in the bank account of that particular municipality. So in terms of the Division of Revenue Act then, and Section 216, National Treasury would invoke those sections where municipalities are not reflecting those amounts in the bank account, which means they would have used it for other purposes. So we wouldn't really say there are conditions, there are no conditions, but where municipalities then are violating the Division of Revenue Act and the Constitution, then Treasury comes in and then sort of invoke those sections. So that municipalities are on track. In some cases, even with the case of unfunded budgets, we normally would withhold, but for a certain period when so that they actually review their budgets until they are balancing. But I think Mr. Hutting can give further details because both National Treasury and Provincial Treasuries, they are the ones that normally do the assessment of the budget for municipalities, obviously working with provincial COCTA and national COCTA, but they take the lead. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Chair, it's Jan Hutting from National Treasury. Do I have your permission to respond to the questions that the DG asked me to assist with?
Yeah, that's fine.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and members. To the new minister and the deputy ministers, congratulations. I hope we will have a fruitful relationship. Chairperson, as far as the question on the litigation between municipalities and abusing taxpayers' money for internal purposes. In this year's Division of Revenue Bill, as presented by Wendy, we have included a provision that strengthened the disclosure of this bad practices in Section 313 of the DORA. Chairperson, we've also, in our budget circular that we've issued last week, we've also elaborated on this because this is a reality issue that instead of following the intergovernmental framework act procedures and processes, people abuse taxpayers' money And therefore, we've included in the Division of Revenue Bill additions or provisions, and the monitoring system will be adjusted accordingly. That's the first response. Chairperson, as far as unfunded budgets is concerned, or the whole budgeting system, this is the competency of the Treasury. Chair, so annually we issue two budget circulars to guide municipalities on to prepare their budgets for the next cycle. And the purpose and objective of this process, Chair, is to detect whether the budget is funded in terms of Section 18 of the Municipal Finance Management Act. Chairperson, in the space of local government, we do not refer to a balanced budget. We refer to a funded budget. At the national provincial level, given that we largely have a case basis of cash basis of accounting, you can balance the budget. In a municipal environment, Chairperson, we have what we refer to as an accrual budgeting system and an accrual reporting system. Therefore, the terminology that we use is a funded budget. Chair, correctly so, we assess the budgets annually of the large 17 cities, the National Treasury, and provincial treasuries, the delegated municipalities, the 240, but within a framework that we've developed over time. And Chair, basically what it translates into, if a council of a municipality, which is responsible to ultimately adopt the budget, proceed with an unfunded budget or unfunded budget, then they are in breach of legislation. And Chairperson, this is where we have progressively, with the political support of the Budget Council and the Budget Forum, introduced measures in Section 2162 to then establish the discipline. And progressively, Chair, we are making inroads, although very slow. But largely what it translates to, Chairperson, is municipalities live beyond their means. They do not collect their revenue, which they legitimately are allowed to collect. And Chairperson, the amounts that we will publish in the second quarter results this week will illustrate the outstanding debtors book, which is quite massive. In fact, it's now 305 billion rand. And the Selga colleagues referred to the what government owes municipality. Chair, that's 22.8 billion rand or 5.7%. So on the broader scheme of things, it's a small amount, but it should be actually zero. The last point, Chairperson, that the DG has asked me to respond is the capacity or the capability work that we're doing to empower municipalities to improve their financial management, generally speaking. Chair, if you look at the schedules in the Division of Revenue Bill, on average, we've allocated 2.6 billion rand, and you can argue for the last 28, 30 years. So by now, technically speaking, we should have no capacity constraints, because this is an enormous amount of investment that we've put into the space of local government in terms of Section 154 of the Constitution. Chair, Wendy's team has recently completed a study, a policy review piece of work on the capacity of local government. And Chair, without talking on behalf of Wendy, but the actual amount is as high as 8 billion rand if you consider all the dimensions of all the capacity across the government system. So Chairperson, this is an enormous investment. And the key question is, why do we not get a return on our investment? I will stop there, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hetting. Please, can you please send to the committee this intervention, please, a write-up of that?
We can certainly do that, Chairperson.
Please, thank you. Please continue, Cocta.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. There was one more question asked by Honorable Sheikh, which related to transparency with regards to tenders and therefore the details of the value that contractors also bring. I must say that this is also a financial related question, which should also be in the purview of the National Treasury. And Chair, this question was also raised in our last COA meeting. And we had since also provided a written response to the Honorable member. Add around the capacity building question that also came from Honorable Kaise. Through the impact forum, there is monitoring that approach that is utilized on all training interventions that are indeed being undertaken. And of course, this is a joint effort by not only DCOG or COPTA, but also with National Treasury and SALGA, and also jointly with the local government CETA. So I think that the question as posed around the return of investment, I think is something that we should go back on and also begin to look at what are the real core reasons for perhaps not being able to adequately respond and saying with absoluteness that yes, we have an absolute return on investment based on the numbers that have also been cited around the expenditure in this regard. Another question that was raised is to do with the early detection or early warning system and whether there are adequate control measures in place that would also further assist the municipalities so that they at least so that there's early detection, on our part, whether there are any financial concerns or I'm specifically referencing municipalities that are financially distressed. I wanted to also just mention here, Chair, that we have, as DCOG, looked at a performance assessment tool. The norms and standards around the assessment tool have indeed been developed in consultation with all key stakeholders and role players. And of course, within the assessment tool are some key financial measures or indicators that we are looking at that will also, in essence, be able to assist us with early detection going forward. We are still nearly at the tail end of endorsing the assessment tool, and we are therefore hoping that it will assist us much more in responding to this question in the future. Chair, I think we have in essence covered most of the questions as raised. Because of most of them have also much more of a financial management flavor to them. And with your permission, Chairperson, I would like to also just ask two of my colleagues to also then respond. I'd like Mr. Ligazi to actually respond to one of the questions, and then also Mthandazo Vimba as well. Thank you so much, Chair, with your permission.
Okay.
Thanks.
I just want to add on the issue regarding indigent registers. As DCOG, we are in deliberation with the South African Revenue Services, SARS, regarding a conclusion of a memorandum of understanding, MOU. Which will assist in this regard in the sense that once municipalities have compiled their indigent registers, they will send them to us. And those indigent registers, amongst others, it will also have the IDs of the people. Then we'll pass the information to SARS for them to check on the income tax whether some of those people are not people who should not be indigent, should not be regarded as indigents, given the fact of whatever information SARS on the income of those people from the tax point of view. So once that is done, that information then will relate to the information. So that information will also assist municipalities to ensure that the indigent registers do have people who should benefit, not other people who may be dipping into it. So I just wanted to add that. So far, our deliberation with SARS are going well. So we think that will be doable. Thanks.
Thank you very much, the person, if I may come in. Hello.
Am I recognized, sir?
Yeah, please come in.
Yes, thank you very much. I will try also to respond to about three questions. One, there is a question about whether we identified impactful municipalities that requires critical infrastructure refurbishments, and which are these municipalities? Yes, Chairperson, we have, of course, together with water and sanitation following the release of the 2022 Green Drop Report, which showed that 23 wastewater systems qualified for Green Drop certification as compared to 60 systems that were awarded Green Drop status in 2013. So all those municipalities that got this challenge in terms of the non-compliance, we have identified them. And a national water and sanitation improvement program have been designed between ourselves, water and sanitation, and DPSA. And water and sanitation in some of these municipalities already have invoked Section 63 of the Water Services Act. So we have that, and there's a program to address shepherds in those municipalities. And most of them are districts, and some of them are really some big districts like Oar Tambo and Amatola and so forth. And another question, Chairperson, which I think we want to also add on it, on the impact of load shedding in municipalities and what as a sector we are doing or are proposing to do. We have made some proposals, Chairperson, that perhaps the non-grid electrification program should be earmarked as well for installation of rooftop solar panels to households, particularly rural households who cannot afford to purchase their own solar systems, and also to health facilities, schools, and any other public facilities. So we are engaging on that, Chairperson. And also, I think the INEP program also must consider funding battery energy storage systems on municipal networks to limit the pressure on the electricity grid during peak times. And I think the above, Chairperson, will enhance generation for municipalities as excess energy generated will be channeled back to the grid and also during load shedding, and stored energy in the battery energy storage systems will also activate electricity distribution and supply. Then there was also, Chairperson, another concerns raised, not by members, but in the SALCA presentation about the pattern of indirect grants, and now, and that NIC as well now is implementing indirect grant as at 2021. I want to just clarify this, Chairperson. MIG remains a schedule 5B, and there is no decision to move MIG to indirect grant. However, what we have done, there are provisions in DORA, Chairperson, section 18 and 19 and 20, which are intervention provisions when municipalities are failing to spend grants. Now, what we have implemented over years has been section 18 and 19, which is a stopping and reallocation of grants to municipalities who are better performing. And our analysis, Chairperson, has revealed that the intervention itself doesn't result in improvement in the affected municipalities. However, it does a disadvantage, in particular communities who are meant to benefit from the grant that gets reallocated to better performing municipalities because of inability of these municipalities to spend. And now we're saying there is a provision, section 20 of DORA, which allows for national government to intervene in municipalities that have got a perennial problem of underspending, instead of stopping the money and relocating to other municipalities or forfeiting it to national fiscals, intervene by appointing capacitated implementing agencies to support the municipality that is struggling and ensure that the money that was allocated for communities is indeed spent in the spaces where it was allocated. And Chairperson, we've done analysis over the past 5 years. MIG is one of the grants that really performs. We've spent on average 90% of our grant, but there are 55 municipalities on average that don't spend their grant at all. And we've got the challenge of spending their grants in full. And we're saying those municipalities which are repeat offenders, if I may use that word loosely, we must be able to anticipate and say, but look, this municipality for the past 3 or 5 years have not been able to spend its grants 100%. And we always stop money and allocate to others. What can we do? Because surely the Section 18-19 intervention has not really assisted. Now, Section 20 allows for us to do that. It's not something that is not provided for in law. But what we have then done on MIG was to say, MIG framework currently does not make provision for conversion of a grant to indirect grant, wherein you can now invoke Section 20 to intervene. Let's then within MIG create 6B component, not as a permanent a measure, but as a measure of last resort, as an alternative to Section 18-19 to intervene for those municipalities that have got a perennial problem and have been losing money to other municipalities. So that I wanted to clarify that so that it must be clear that we are not intending to convert MIG into indirect grant at all. There's no such an intention. MIG will remain a direct grant. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Who's next? Our minister.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think the colleagues have touched on quite a number of issues. I would emphasize some few. One, them I did not touch on it strongly. I think it was by Honorable Kwaka with regard to consultants, use of consultants with minimal benefit for the municipalities. Chair, you don't look comfortable. Can you hear me?
No, so right, being to your head, so now you have
okay, I have moved my, chair. Thank you very much, Chair. I could see your expression. Thank you for that. I was saying, Honorable Chair.
Am I that transparent?
Well, I could read from your face that something is amiss. I actually at first thought maybe I muted myself. I forgot to unmute, you know, but it's okay, Che. The issue of consultants, colleagues might have not clearly indicated the plan that ourselves and DECOG and the auditor general have come up with linked to the two areas which I've articulated to at my opening remarks, which Vimba possibly could have added on because MISA is also driving the records and asset management program of municipalities, which have been very perennial areas where we use a consultant, and then the overall compilation of AFS, which also falls within the stream of how municipalities could be supported at the identification level. SALGA might have not added as well the 10 municipalities that they're able to take financially on their MASP program, which is the municipal audit support program, where we collectively deal with assisting in identifying municipalities, assist them with their audit plans. This a response, this might not be sufficient, Chair, but it goes to show that it's a start in a direction where we would want to reduce and ultimately eradicate. So for starters, we have done a test and a comparison of what are the financial units having in terms of warm bodies, loosely said, but the human capital that is in finances, in our finance divisions and PTOs, what do they have qualifications? What do they need to have? What is the gap? And bring in support and development where it's necessary. But we've also realized a target, I think, of about 8%, where municipalities have the necessary and competent staff, but do not utilize it on a day-to-day basis to reconcile on their figures to ultimately arrive at annual financial statements that needs to be submitted at the end of every August to the Auditor General. The issue of the price advertising of contracts, I think it was one of the first or second questions. It was linked to escalation and whether we could also advertise and make the contracts public. Honorable Chair, I think it was Honorable Imam, and he excused himself due to traveling schedule. Chair, municipalities by law, and we have verified they do this, the MFMA compels them on a quarterly basis to put, and they usually do it in their council documents, which are public documents and public access meetings. But I do guess, because this is coming for the second or third time, we could try as COCTA, maybe not on a 257 scale at the beginning, to collect and collate that information and distribute it. But mandatory National Treasury can also add into that obligation that they are compelled to tell the public who have they contracted for what service, for how much, for how long, even if it's a multi-year project, how much ultimately will it cost? And National Treasury, as part of what they do on a day-to-day basis, is also to verify, according to the report, as to whether the costs are escalating or are not escalating. As SALGA, at a particular stage, we had done a study in trying to compare, for example, if there were quotas of the in the PPE material that are the municipalities who purchased beyond that. I think at a selection of programs, continuously, we could be able to do that. But I'm not certain, Jay, if we could be able to have a capacity to look into all a supply chain processes that are done by municipalities and how much do they buy water for. But we may check as to whether Section 71 may not be able to assist us with regard to that. I just want to touch on the, make an addition on the indigent and the MOU with SARS, but I will not repeat what has already been covered in terms of SARS assisting us to verify if the indigents are qualifying to be indigent. But also on the other side of the coin, our discussion with SARS is to say, now that we have Tembinga Dimeng
who is now supposed to be paid back by SARS, whatever, according to a pay-as-you-earn refund that he or she's supposed to get. Can SARS verify with municipalities in that in those particular provinces and areas if Municipality X is being owed and SARS pays the municipality first before it pays the incumbent? It relates to one of the areas of how are we going to avert a debt accumulation. Because the state pays back the very same person who owes the state in many instances. And SARS is one of the starting points. So our MOU is in twofold in terms of discussion. But also on debt accumulation, we are writing off a debt, a process, an application, which will be thoroughly verified, due diligence, vis-a-vis
recording stopped. Smart
meters. So you are not going to write off a debt and not put a measure. For example, if we are writing off a debt of a household, that municipality, together by DCOG and National Treasury, will look into ways of putting smart meters so that they are able not to regenerate the charge.
Recording
and it's one
in progress.
Of the measures that are supposed to be followed through, even in our discussion documents. I think the assessment tool, the DG, Honorable Chair, you raised the ERRP matter. And DG has talked to the assessment tool, but maybe could have also included that ordinarily we had five areas in which we were looking at governance, administration, financial management, et cetera. But we looked at the beginning of this year of including the sixth pillar of our assessment tool, which is looking into the components of our economic response and growth and our planning in municipalities to ensure that we also assess municipalities, give them the same capacity and assistance that they may need. You may be aware, Jay, it has been raised in this meeting repeatedly, and why a choice to look into the assessment tool to include the economic development and growth of municipalities, because it has been difficult for us in the municipalities to get the ball rolling, even in terms of forming of units that are responsible for economic development. Those units, if are there, they are not properly staffed and funded. It's a by the way issue. So this assessment tool that currently our DCOG officials in provinces are looking into municipalities with regard to the ERP and its imperatives, support economic development, but also look into areas of ensuring that we promote economic development to ensure that we also minimize or play a role in minimizing unemployment in the spaces where we operate as municipalities. And that ultimate law in turn may also give us people who are able to pay for the services that small businesses and themselves as households are utilizing. I think I wanted to mention lastly, Chair, on the issue of coalition. SALGA did touch on the a proposal on Section 12. And Chair will recall the first debate which we had last day, I think in November, which was sponsored in the National Assembly by our portfolio committee. We then circulated a draft, which is still at the portfolio level, in terms of discussion on how could we, in instances where it's necessary, even legislate or put regulations with regard to coalitions and their management. But to date, coalitions or metros, where mainly the challenges are, and most of our residents resides there, about 60% actually collected with the intermediary cities of South African stays in metros and in intermediary cities. And there are challenges and stability with regards to governance. But COGTA in its strategy now has got a presence in provinces as well, who go to these municipalities on a day-to-day to even assist with legal matters where provinces are supposed to, or municipalities and provinces have got a legal interlock or deadlock, so that we are able to assist them to focus on service delivery. I think, Chair, that's what I wanted to echo on, but I think a number of issues, even in infrastructure assistance, were covered, and the plans that we're trying to do together with National Treasury with regard to budget assistance and costs maintenance in municipalities. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor De Gale and the SALCA team, Honourable Minister Nkadile and your team, thank you very much for the engagement. You could see the questions emanating from our side show that it's an area of government where we think if we don't get it correct, right, the question of service delivery will remain an illusion. So it's very important that we should get that one a goal. And the strides that are being made in dealing with a very, very difficult challenge at that level of government, I think they are recognized. Oral Minister, I always argue that you see, this thing of national, provincial, and local government, it's our thing. Our people just know government, and they don't get to know this thing, that this one is a national responsibility, provincial responsibility, local government responsibility. So whenever there are challenges as far as service delivery, it always gets reflected at local government level. And sometimes I must say that without any fear of contradiction, that sometimes it suits us, those of us who are at national and provincial, to say the problems are local government problems. When there are issues of education, people deal with local government, although education is a provincial government. When there are issues of defense and police, the people who are on the receiving end, again, would be councillors and local government. They wouldn't know that this is a national competence. So the question of DDM and integration of our services as government becomes very important. And moving away from the silo mentality when we deal with the problems which are affecting our people. So as I always try to underline this thing that people relate with government. They don't relate with local or provincial or national government. They relate with government, and it's incumbent upon us as government to make sure that we do a work together in trying to resolve this problem. I was listening that there are things which need some legislation intervention, things that must be done, for instance, to allow to allow intervention. Let me just say this thing of, for instance, moving resources from one municipality because there's no capacity to another one. We are punishing people that have got nothing to do with what capacity as government to have. So I agree that let's do everything. If legislation must be changed, we are lawmakers, let's change those legislation. Let's not punish our people. I'm definitely not one of these people who favor this thing of moving resources from one municipality to the other. Let's have long-lasting solutions. As we do that, let's not deny people the services that they deserve. You end up having a double jeopardy type of a situation. So I think we need to deal with the challenges around MIG as to what we can do. It's law. We are lawmakers, all of us. So let's change. Let's make sure we deal with those things at DM, and let those things not be a minister. Let those things not be long-winded. Let's deal with the problems and make sure that the services end up reaching our people. I will then request minister. When it comes to the question of what is being done to try and reduce this thing of over reliance on consultants. You see, if you take financial management, it doesn't help to get a consultant at the end of the year to come and do your books, because financial management it's a process which starts long before even the financial year starts. So if you are going to get a consultant at the end of the year, you are going to collect those slips and so on and so forth. Whereas it should be a process. So I'm just picking up on that one. All what the consultant will do is to help you to say at the end of the year, you are having a disclaimer. So it doesn't help. So I understand there are interventions that are being made to try and deal with this thing of over-reliance on consultants. So you could just drop us that paper so that we can always look at it and see, be able to track a progress that is being made at that level. But with those words, again, let me thank Councillor Dekgale and your team, your management, the acting CEO, the CFO, for the presentation. Thank you, Minister, and brand new deputy ministers and everybody, DG, and your team for the presentation and for responded to our questions and issues that we've raised. And we're wishing all of you, as I said, that this level of government is very important to all of us. Happy landing as you are getting accustomed to your new environment. Thank you very much. And honorable members, thank you for attending this meeting on Friday. And support staff, members of the public, members of the media, everybody, we are most welcome. And this brings us to the end of this meeting. Thank you very much.